Conference Annual Promises Meeting. My name is Roberta, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome here in Overeaters Anonymous, where we not only find fellowship, but diligently work the 12 steps of OA. We discover a common solution to our problems with food. So I want to remind you to please turn off your cell phone. And please, no private conversations or crosstalk. With those who wish, please join us in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, who would like to read how it works from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Can I have a volunteer? Thank you, Tammy. I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but there's a light here. Can you see it?
Yes. How good evening, everyone. Tammy from Puerto Rico.
Hi, Tammy.
How is it? Rarely have we seen a person filled with truly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to these simple programs. Usually men and women who are constantly incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunate, they are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally capable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from great emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we walk. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness of our command, we beg of you to be fearless and true from the start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil, until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested in the program of recovery. 1. We admitted we are powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaim, "What an order! I cannot go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the overeater, the chapter of agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our overeating. C, that God
could have stopped.
Okay, we're meeting to discuss the OA promises, which come after the ninth step in the big book on pages 83 and 84. Would somebody like to come up and read the promises? Thank you. Deanna?
Oh, you do the next reading. Deanna will do the next reading. Thank you.
Okay.
The promises from pages 83 and 84 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. 2. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. 3. We will not regret the past or wish to shut the door. 4. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. 5. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. 6. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. 7. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. 8. Self-seeking will slip away. 9. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. 10. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. 11. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. 12. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work on them.
Okay, so this evening, each of our 12 speakers will share their experience, strength, and hope on how one of the 12 promises has manifested in their life. So we have all of them in here. And since we want a spontaneous, honest share, they don't know which one they're going to pick. So let's pass it down, pick one out, and then you'll each read the one you got, and we'll start with the first promise and go that way. Okay, we hear some laughs, some grunts, some, I guess, it's meant to be. Okay, why don't you each read the one you have, so we'll, should we do that?
Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us.
I have number two. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness.
And number five. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others.
Number 7, we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows.
Number 6, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear.
Number 1, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through.
Number 4, we will comprehend when we're ready and we
will know. Well, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves.
Okay. So the way it works is that each speaker will have 8 minutes to share. The timer is right in front of us, and at 7 minutes, you will have 1 minute to wrap it up. We'll do the first 4 promises, and then we'll take a petition. So, promise 1, we are painstaking, okay, so would you like the hand mic, or would you like it on the stand?
Can people hear me, or should I get a mic?
Use the mic.
Oh, okay. Okay, 1, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. My name is Mary Pat, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
I'm Mary Pat.
And this made me laugh twice. First of all, it's big print. Yay, so I could read it. And also, who knows what halfway through is? So I'm 17 years into the program, but I'm 15 and three quarters years into my abstinence. And if I'm really understanding this, I was, because they're talking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. When I came into program, about 6 months after my sister, who I was closest to in age and probably closest to, had died of cancer. She was a hospice nurse. She had had an 18-month ordeal, and she had made the decision. She knew when she got her diagnosis that there was very little they could do for her at that time. So she knew it was really a death sentence. But she chose to go ahead and let the doctors do all sorts of experimental procedures on her. And when I asked her about that, when she got close to her death, and they finally agreed there was nothing more they could do, she said, "I did that because I am a career nurse, and I wanted medical science to have that research so they can move forward," which I just loved. The loss of her threw me into just an abyss. I didn't realize until her death, and there have been more in my life, but that there are people who love us and see us so clearly. I was blessed to have her for sure. That she kind of tethered me to this planet. And with her presence being gone, I really found myself floundering. She had been core to my self-esteem. She had been a mirror for who I thought I was, and when I flagged or I was depressed, she would be everything for me. Well, a dear friend witnessed that I was really in this depression, and she said, you know, and I was the biggest I've ever been. I weighed 240 pounds at the time, and I had said to my sister, if you survive this, we've got to do something about this, and I think we've done every diet that exists. I think OA is the only possibility for us. So my friend, who was in another program and also in OA, was my Eskimo and brought me in. And I came into the rooms deeply depressed, the heaviest I'd ever been, and with the lowest self-esteem I think I'd ever had. That changed almost in the first few, well, it did in the first few weeks of meetings. I saw hope. I saw a possibility of restoring my self-esteem, that it wasn't based on how much I weighed or who liked me or what I did for a living, that it was an inside job. That was news for me, brand new news, and I was 50 years old at the time. So I found hope almost immediately.
I found an abstinence immediately. It lasted a year, and it had been sugar. And my sponsor, who was just a dear young guy, and I picked him because I thought he was so humble. And I loved that, and I thought, gee, that's a quality I'd like to have more of. So when I got to my fifth step, I thought, he was 24 years old and I was 50. And I thought, I just can't do this to this sweet young boy. Sit down and tell him 50 years of my life. It's dear of him to be my sponsor, and I've learned a lot about humility. But I think he knows nothing about 50-year-old women. And probably doesn't want to know that. So we switched. But also he had said to me, my abstinence was sugar, and at Christmas I decided to make candy for friends because it was a fairly inexpensive thing to do, and I could do it. And he said, I don't think that's really a great idea. And I said, well, I'm not going to eat any. I have no desire for it whatsoever. But, of course, while I made it, I tested and picked and did things, and by an hour into this process, I thought, I've been eating sugar. So I called him, and he said, well, I can't say I'm surprised. And he said, I really would call that a break in abstinence because you had some time to think about it, and you decided to do it anyway. So I started again. And I just found that this is a merciful, merciful program. You can make mistakes. You can fail. You can put on weight. You can lose weight. You can try things that come up. You can hear conversations. You can be influenced by things. And lots of them work for a while, and then you find yourself in the room saying, what am I doing? This is like outside literature. I'm doing outside activities. And I know better. This is the place where I have found recovery. I have found things in this room that I never expected. I have found sanity. I'd also been diagnosed years ago with bipolar disease. That has never, since I've been in these rooms, visited me in the way that it used to prior to walking into these rooms. I now have a totally unexpected gift from God, 5 years where it hasn't disrupted my life in any way. And I think the miracle of that is I went after the things that were torturing me. I went after my desire to please beyond the necessity to do so. Because of low self-esteem, I spent a lot of time trying to love people who didn't really respect, see me, or love me. I spent a lot of time on financial worry. I spent a lot of time on thinking that my career was who I was. I took on tasks and did things for people because I thought I'm in a better situation than they are. I should take care of them. What was I doing taking care of people? Who did I think I was guiding anybody? But it was done with the best of hearts. That was the best heart I had at the time. But humility has taught me now that I meet people who are having difficulty and in trouble, and I don't try to fix it. I listen to them, and I try to love them. And I try to encourage them that there is light and it can change. It changed for me. It can change for them. So I'm sure I'm at least halfway through this journey, maybe not. But I was painstaking. That doesn't mean for anybody who's a newcomer in this program, painstaking does not mean you have to get it right. Painstaking means that you show up at your meetings, you make your phone calls, you find a sponsor, and you put one foot in front of the other, and you keep walking. And progress is not a straight line. I knew that intellectually, but I have learned it as a reality in these rooms. And I could not be more grateful. And always, no matter what's going on in my life or the world, I come to these rooms, I go to a meeting or I talk to a fellow, and I have hope again. And I have found, I think, a much kinder, softer, gentler me. And I have found happiness in my life, tremendous happiness I never expected. I'm surprised by joy all the time. I will be in my car driving, I'll get jammed in traffic. And no, this isn't all the time, but it happens more frequently than it doesn't. And I realize I'm going to be late no matter how early I started. I'm not going to be able to get where I'm going. I can't use my phone in my car. And I'll think, oh, well, prayer time. And I think, oh, that's so much better than what used to go through my head. The vitriol, the swearing, the trying to move traffic faster than it was moving. And that is a daily thing in our lives. You drive, you're out on the highways. And for that to be a pleasure for me now, and for me to see this and go, that's God's business, is a miracle. So I've experienced miracles in this room. Thanks for letting me share.
Who's promised who?
Thank you. Hi, my name is Rosalinda, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
All right.
Step two, we are going to know a new happiness and a new freedom. I came in to this program 25 years ago, weighing 265 pounds. I never knew what the word freedom meant. Freedom in the physical sense and freedom in the emotional sense. My obesity was my protection. It held all my life inside. Was my wall. When I came into this program and I had what they talk about in the big book, a spiritual experience. My daughter had been paralyzed from the neck down. I was in the hospital with my daughter. I was wearing a muumuu and flip-flops. The only reason I ever wore rollers was because I wanted you to think that somebody wanted me someplace, that I had someplace to go. Well, there I am in this emergency room, and the doctor comes over to me and he tells me, I was married at 16. I had no life experience. I never took responsibility for anything in my life. I ate my way through problems. The doctor came to me and he said my daughter was dying. And God just spoke to me. He said, call your cousin over at UCLA, who I rarely ever spoke to, and I called her. I got her, told her what was happening with my daughter. And she said, I'm going to send a van from UCLA. We're going to pick her up. We're going to take her to UCLA. I was in this little hospital. And I stood there. And the doctor came to me and told me that she was going to die. I said, I'm moving her to UCLA. And he put this paper in front of me. He gave me a pen. And he said, I want you to sign here. Because she's going to die on the way over. And you are going to take responsibility for it. And for the very first time in my life, I realized there was no food in the world that was going to guide me through this. And all of a sudden, I felt this warmth surround me, this presence engulf me. And it said to me, sign. I didn't know it then, but that spiritual experience opened the way for God, a God I had never felt before. My daughter survived. I came in, and I had gone to a meeting the previous OA meeting just a week before this happened, and I remembered the woman who had the meeting at her home because the church was closed. So I went to that woman, and I knew that she would not turn me away. I knew that because of what in that moment I had experienced from God, and that very first meeting, when she opened the door, I broke down in front of her, and she took me in her arms. And she began the journey with me for 15 years as my sponsor. She showed me the way to the freedom of letting go of all the baggage that I carried through writing, through sharing with my sponsor, through working the steps. And in the process of that, putting my faith in something beyond my beliefs, because I didn't have any beliefs that could sustain a recovery for my daughter or recovery for me. So I had faith in something beyond that, a greater, higher power. Working with her for those 15 years, this woman said that I had been given, that my daughter had not only been given the chance of life again, and I have to share that my daughter today walks with crutches, but she is a doctor. No one ever, in the process of her recovery or her physical challenges, ever said to me that she was going to achieve any kind of momentum in her life. But you did. You did. My sponsor in the fellowship said the freedom that I had experienced of letting go, I had to give my daughter. And because of that, I did not limit my daughter. I did not have to go to her and say, don't try that, because you might hurt yourself. Or don't participate in that because I'm afraid they'll hurt your feelings and I'm going to feel bad. I had to give her that new freedom, just like the one you gave me. That new freedom allowed me to go to school. I had barely graduated from high school. I only have 1 minute, so I'm going to finish up. But with the work that I did through the steps, I found not only the freedom, but the happiness of achieving, of getting my college degrees, on becoming a college administrator, on being able to look like a professional, of dating and having boyfriends. Something at 265 was never in my vision. For my life and for the life of my children, I thank you for this freedom and this happiness. Thank you.
I'm just really, really grateful to be a member of Overeaters Anonymous and an opportunity to be of service. This program has given me not just my life, but a life worth living. You know, I came to these rooms over 20 years ago, and I got a sponsor right away and started working the steps right away and got to healthy body weight. I was already a 100-pounder in my 20s. And I left this program within days of my 10th birthday, and I was in relapse for about 5 years, and as they say, you leave, you you know, we'll give you a full refund. I got a full refund. I got a rebate. Everything back plus. And, you know, they also say that, you know, you go, well, I didn't go back. I went to a whole new scary place with the food, a whole new place. You know, I didn't have the tools to deal with where this disease took me when I left these rooms. So, you know, I've shared on the promises before, and I keep getting the regret one. I keep getting the same. I was just driving, and I wonder if I'm going to get the regret one again. I guess, you know, my higher power wants me to look at that again. And of course, I regret leaving Overeaters Anonymous. You know, I have, you know, and when I left these rooms, you know, it never occurred to me that I was going to be okay. I told myself that I was going to be okay with not being okay. I had a belief that I somehow would be able to come back when it got too bad. And I was stunned to find out that I was not just powerless over this disease, that I, you know, when you take that, when I took that first compulsive bite, it was like the first domino in a chain of dominoes that needed to run its course, and it took me 5 years to come back, 5 years and 150 pounds. So when I came back into these rooms, you guys taught me the importance of the first word and the first step, which is we, which I forgot about that, because if I'm powerless, if it's just about me against my disease, I don't have a shot. But if the first, if I translate I to we, then I've got a shot. I got a shot at this, at facing things that I don't want to face, doing things I don't really want to do, I don't really want to call people. I really want to look at, you know, things in my past. I definitely don't want to look at my part. And I really don't want to look at these regrets. And I found, you know, what I've heard from other people seems to be true for me, is that when I work the steps, I begin to abstain and I begin to heal. But when I start working with others, that's when I really start to recover. That's when, for me, my recovery really started, by helping someone else through the steps. Because I think the first time I was through the steps, I think I was still kind of wet brain, foodaholic, you know, just wasn't really clear when I came back in. Like, there was a lot of cognitive problems going on from just eating tons and tons of sugar and tons of flour, overeating, and highly preserved foods, and having to detox from that. But in helping other people through the 12 steps, that's how I learned compassion, not just for others, but for myself, because we all seem to make a lot of the same choices, draw the same types of conclusions. You know, we have the same kind of 2 + 2 = 7 type of logic that goes on in our brains. And if I hear it and I see it over and over and over and over again in you, I can see it a little bit clearly in me. And when I'm working with others, that's the only time I don't regret the past and wish to shut the door on it, because every single thing I've been through that I wish I hadn't been through, everything that I've seen and heard and experienced and feelings that I felt and thoughts that I had that I didn't want to have, became valuable in that moment, when I'm present for somebody else who's walking through their journey. You know, when I came back into these rooms, my sponsor, she used the word courage a lot. And I didn't know what she was talking about with courage. It's like, you know, when the building's on fire, you know, you run out of the building. That's pretty much what you do. I don't know, that requires a whole lot of courage, because that's how I felt. When I came into these rooms, I'm just like running out of a burning building. Like, there was no other option for me. If there was another option, I would be out there exercising it. When I work with others, I do see the courage now. Now I can see it, both in the women I sponsor and also in myself. I see that it really takes a lot of courage to take a leap of faith, even when you believe that this isn't going to work, because when I came back, I didn't believe this is going to work. I thought maybe I'd binge every other day or once a week. You know, I didn't believe that I could have that experience, not just of not eating the food, but freedom from the obsession. The obsession from food and the obsession about my past and all of those regrets and wanting to shut the door on it. So I see the courage today. You know, it does take a lot of courage to try to get out of that burning building, even if you think you're really not going to make it. It takes a lot of courage to take a leap of faith thinking that, you know, this isn't going to work. In those moments when I am with my fellows, I really see the value of my past. And as I've also heard other people saying in these rooms, we get to visit the places we used to live. You know, I don't have to live in the past, but I can visit the past, and I can see how it can be valuable to somebody else. Thanks for listening.
We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. So I'll take a peaceful deep breath. Oh my God, what if we did an 8-minute meditation, you guys? So I've been in program for 12 years and right now I'm abstinent for 2. So I've relapsed in my story. I'm also a 100-pounder and I have a healthy body weight for the first time in my adult life in my 40s. So that's pretty amazing. And I never, ever, 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 ever thought that it would have been possible when I was eating, when I was 255 pounds when I came in. I definitely did not think there was any hope for me. It just seemed impossible. So we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. I have so many things came to mind when I saw that I got that. One of them is that for the past 5 years I have been committing my food. And prior to that, the concept completely terrified me, and I just wouldn't even consider doing it until I got the sponsor that I have now, and I was totally desperate because I had relapsed, and I had gained a bunch of weight back, and I was terrified because I thought, what am I going to do? If this isn't working, nothing else is going to work. So I went to another 100-pounder who had kept a lot of weight off for a long time, and I thought, okay, well, other 100-pounders have done it. I'm not so special that I can't do it too. I just need to know what to do. So that was the avenue I picked at that point, and it worked out pretty well. So I did what she told me to do, and she told me to commit my food. So I started doing that in the morning. Now I do it the night before, and I actually really love it. And it didn't take me a long time to love it because I found this. I can't remember how long, frankly. Like, maybe it was a week, maybe it was 2 weeks. That all of a sudden, it shut down some chatter in my brain, and I was able to kind of look at it and say, oh my God, by doing this one thing, I actually feel a little less like an addict. And I didn't really realize how much chit chat in my brain there was about all the energy that goes into thinking about food. What am I going to eat? When am I going to eat it? Can I eat it? Where am I going to eat it? What's it? You know, everybody knows. You know what we're talking about. So that was one very specific gift that I felt was given to me. I don't know. I don't know if that's everybody's experience. I mention it to people and I get flustered. So, but for me,
It's real. Another thing, so serenity and peace, I get so much of the chatter in the brain. So over the 12 years that I've been here, I think of myself as Zaz, but other people will say to me that you're so calm, and I'll think, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And so, because you guys can't hear what's going on in my brain, but that's something that has come from here, and so, and where does that come from? So, on the journey of acting like less of an addict, by working the steps, and a lot of people mentioned all the great things that we do by writing, getting the thoughts out of my head and onto paper on a daily basis. I write every morning. I don't censor it. I just write, and it doesn't matter how crazy it sounds because no one has to hear it. Another thing that's been so freeing to me is that it's okay if people do hear the crazy stuff in my head. I think another one of the turning points in my recovery was when my sponsor would give me writing assignments, and I would write like 3, 4, 5 pages, and then I would read them to her, and I would not care that how it sounded, and I would just read them, and I would read them back to her because I would never read them back myself after I wrote them, and I'd be horrified, and I'd be embarrassed, and I'd be like, oh my god, I wrote that? That's so cool. Oh my god, I don't even remember that I said that. But being able to open up the thoughts in my head to another human being and have them, I guess it's like a step into you talk to someone else about the things that you're keeping secret and that you're scared of and that you think makes you different and makes you not quite right, and someone else, you know, is either, you know, on the best, you know, they're like, you know, me too, you know, at the worst, there's silent acceptance, you know, we're allowed to be who we are, and we're never as bad as we think we are. Giving myself a break, because I've always thought that there is something very, very wrong with me. And that's what my head would tell me over and over and over and over again. And I don't think that anymore. But I think it's much, much less. I still, you know, of course it still pops into my head. I'm convinced more than ever, based on reading that I do, only because I'm inspired by having been in these rooms that I read things that make me, you know, that teach me about my not only spirituality but my mind, and so I see that like our brains are just throwing out lots of thoughts, and I don't have to believe all of them. I think it's my nose. Did it? Hello. I'll speak louder. So, sorry. So, lots of crazy, crazy thoughts in my head all the time, and I do not have to listen to them. So, thank you. So this will be a pitch for meditation. And I get why, thank you, I think about it again. And I get why it's called a practice, because, thank you. Because I've been practicing it like since before I got into program. So if anybody is wondering about meditation, thinking that they can't do it, thinking that it's too hard, it took me years and years to build up a meditation practice. And it was totally worth it, because at this point I do 20 minutes a day. I never thought that would have been possible. I also can't explain why it works and how it quiets my mind and how it definitely makes me feel better. I have no idea how I know that. I just do. So I would definitely give a plug for keeping at it if you're finding it challenging. And there are lots of different ways to do it these days, and I definitely think it's worth it. In my last like few seconds, I also wanted to say that it's not only for me. Thank you. I'll wrap it up by saying that if my head is quieter, It's not just, you know, when your mouth is shut, you can listen to other people. It's like, I can be of service and I can be in the world with a lot more grace if I'm not listening to my head all the time. So if I'm at peace, I can be of service better, which is a huge gift in itself. Thank you.
Okay, while Deanna reads the 12 traditions, we're going to the bathroom because we're self-supporting for our own contributions. A contribution of $5 or more is suggested.
Welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is the one ultimate authority, a loving God who may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are the trusted servants who do not govern. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose. Carry a sense to the bulk of overeaters who still suffer. Six, an OA group are never endorsed, financed, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise with problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers name fully special workers. 9. OA asks that ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those who serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public outreach policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place
principles before personalities.
Thank you. Okay, so 5. No matter how far down the stair we have gone, who's got 5?
I have 5. I'm Jessica, compulsive overeater bulimic.
Hi, Jessica.
Thank you so much, Arlene, for asking me to speak tonight. First of all, I'm going to get this out of the way that the word Gale is in here, and I realize that's not the intention of this promise, but when I first came into the rooms and I heard, oh, we're going to go down the scale, I was thrilled, and I signed up right away. And you know, I thought that was what it was. I thought I was going to lose weight, and my first year of abstinence was weight gain because I wanted that weight loss so badly. And when I finally let that go, then the weight came off, ironically. But I know that that's not what this means, and I know that God gave me this promise tonight because I did not want to come tonight and speak. And not because I don't love being of service and seeing all you guys and being around fellows, because I don't feel worthy of speaking. And especially, like, in this room, there's so much recovery. And everyone's like, I've been in the room for 20 years. And I'm like, hi, 2.5 years in the rooms, 2.5 years abstinent. And, you know, and I am so hard on myself that I never think that's good enough to share with you, and I have nothing to offer. And but yeah, I wanted to stay home and isolate. So thank you, God, for this. But yeah, and my story is not like I lost all this weight, and you know, I came in these rooms and everyone's showing pictures, and that's just not my story. And I really like this promise too because it talks about benefiting others, and I am a big people pleaser, so I love to help and benefit others. And you know, my story is I was an overweight child, and I got made fun of a lot, and you know, it was really hard on me. And then I learned
how to eat better, and I lost some weight, and that's when I got attention from others, and they were like, oh, you look great. You know, so I, right away, I was like, oh, this is what people want. They want me to look this way. That means they're going to love me. And so I spent a lot of my life before program trying to make other people happy, trying to benefit others. And the way I did that was just taking care of their needs and trying to be something for them. And that meant trying to look a certain way. And for me, that turned into bulimia. That turned into me trying to control food, trying to look like a certain body shape so that I could please you guys. And it never worked, though. Nobody ever was pleased. You know, I never had healthy relationships, friendships. My dating life was terrible. People just used me, and I also used them. And I used them to make me feel better. And, you know, and now that I'm in program, I really get this. As much as I think I'm not benefiting anyone from any of my experience, I realize, like, it's just honesty. Like, this whole time, I didn't know that we just have to be honest, and you guys kind of like that. You know, and you kind of appreciate that instead of me pretending to be something I'm not. Nobody got any benefit out of that, and neither did I. And, you know, to me, this means, you know, who cares how far you just got in the room? It's your first day, and you're being honest. Somebody's gonna get something from that, and you know, and I can easily see that and hear it. And but in my head, I tell myself, no, you're not good enough. You know, no one's getting anything out of your shares. You know, you should just shut up. You know, and I really experienced this a lot. I just went to Mexico on a vacation, and it was a very challenging trip. I mean, I had a great time, don't get me wrong, but a lot of stuff came up for me, and the food was very difficult for me over there because I love to control what I'm going to eat, and I love to plan it out ahead. And in Mexico, it was like, no, I'm not going to get my vegan salad, you know, that I want. I'm going to just get what I can get at the time. And it was difficult for me because I felt like a failure, you know, like I'm not doing my program right. And I would just share that. And I stayed very close to my fellows in Mexico because I really needed you guys with me there. And I even shared that. I'm like, I'm failing in OA. Like, I'm a terrible OA student. I wasn't doing my stuff work there. I mean, I was barely getting called in, but I was reaching out constantly. And just being honest about what was going on. Like, I said, hey, look, I'm food sloppy. I'm doing this. Like, I was just honest, and that was it. And, you know, I had all these fellows tell me, oh my God, you're so brave. You're doing so, I'm so impressed with you. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, what? Why are you getting anything out of this? But it's just this constant feedback. And it's positive. Like, everyone's getting something out of what I have to say, always. And it shocks me. But this, you know, and the same thing happens on the other side, though. Whenever I hear anybody speak, I always get something out of it, and it's just my head telling me that my experience isn't benefiting others. But I feel safe here now to be myself and just to share what's on my mind, which sounds crazy to me in my head, and half the time I don't want to tell you because it sounds crazy, and then once I tell you, then somebody else tells me they're feeling the same thing, and that's how this program works. For instance, a fellow and I were talking on the way here, like, that we were both in meetings at separate times, not present, judging other people, and you know, I was ashamed to feel that way, but I shared that with her, and she had the exact same experience, and it's such a blessing that this whole time I thought I needed to look and act a certain way to benefit others, which is what I wanted to do the whole time, my whole life. I just wanted to make everyone happy, and then at the end of the day, all I had to do was be honest and be myself, and that was enough. And so I'm just so blessed that that's what my life is like today. I don't have to put on that face anymore and pretend that I'm okay. It's okay not to be okay. In fact, it's kind of appreciated. So thank you for letting me not be okay with you all and for letting me speak tonight.
Thank
you. Hi, I'm Adam. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Adam.
Six. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. And then when we read that, did Tammy, were you reading the promises? Or whoever read the promises, like, when that promise came up, I went, ugh. I knew I was going to get it. And everyone shared that. It's been so amazing. It's just, like, moving, and my mind is on fire. And I don't like that, because when I'm speaking, I want to just talk for, you know, and, like, let it all come out, you know, organically, but now my mind is full of stuff, so maybe I better get that out first. But when I think of the ninth step promises, I think of freedom, because each one of them is a freedom of a kind. And then I start thinking about Exodus and this idea of freedom from slavery and the slavery of this disease. And I keep on having this image of, you know, when in the Exodus story, the Jews wandered the desert for 40 years afterwards, and they could never get it together. One teaching on that was, one teaching on that is that it took a generation to be able to rid themselves psychologically of that mindset of slavery. And that's the way it feels to me. And I think that the steps are a way to shake loose that mindset of slavery to this disease. And so everything is a feeling. Like, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Something about this disease, and I don't know if it's a chicken and egg thing, but the self-centeredness that goes on with this disease is so profound. Like, there's something seriously wrong with me, and I have to pay acute attention to what's going on. What's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong. And that feeling of, so all these enslavements are so self-centered. They're all about navel staring. They're all about what's wrong with me, what's wrong with me. You know, I'm useless, and poor me, you know. And when I work through all, and it's really important, it's the ninth step promises, because everything up to the, we talk about the 10th, 11th, and 12th steps as being maintenance steps, because it's really the first nine steps that clear out all that garbage that we're carrying with us. It clears it all away, so that if we work them to the best of our ability, this is when the freedom comes, and the rest will keep us day to day, good, fit, spiritual condition. So, and that's not always the case with me, because I'm not really good at staying. I've been in programs since 1985, and I've had long periods of abstinence, years, three, then four, then two, then four, then three, and I would go out for years at a time, and terrible relapses. I've swung between, I think, 310 at least. I was a 58-inch waist down to 155, which is about 10 or 15 pounds less than I ought to be. And so you can do the math, that's a lot of weight. And it's because I never believed that I was really free. I would have periods of that where I'd be in that right mindset. But for whatever reason, I would revert back to this slavery mentality. speak specifically about uselessness and self-pity. I have this thing that goes on with me about uselessness. You know, I'm the piece of shit that the universe revolves around. That I'm incapable, I'm inadequate, I'm incompetent, all these negative. These are all like conclusions that are it's like a child's reasoning for why my parents don't like me, kind of thing. It's a very simplistic and extreme. You notice that with compulsive eaters and alcohol addicts, that addict thinking, it's very extreme. It's always extreme. So it's not just that I'm not really great at something; it's I'm useless. and it's like self-pity. I mean, that's pretty extreme. And you can feel sorry for yourself, but I feel pity for myself. Like, I'm not even worth, like, there's no chance. I'm hopeless. I was talking to my sister about compulsive eating because she's got it too. And I was explaining step one to her once. And I said, powerless over food. She said, I know, I'm helpless. And I go, no, it's powerless. There's a difference between the helpless and powerless. Because you can go to a meeting and get help. Mm. And she couldn't see the difference. And I couldn't see the difference. And at times I don't see the difference. Like right now I'm going through this thing where my physical body is attacking me. And I'm not well. And I've been like, it's minor, I think. But I've always like leaned on my body as something like a tree trunk. Something solid. And I've had some experiences lately in the last, like, I don't know, 4 years it's literally been building, but I had some experiences particularly recently where my body did not work. And I went straight to, oh my God, I'm dying. And my mother, for the last 3 years, she's been calling me. She lived in Mexico at the time. Come down, I'm dying. You know, so it's like this runs in our family. This is extreme addict thinking. So I had this epiphany, a minor epiphany while I was listening tonight about, oh, no, my body is just the way it is, and I need to get into acceptance about that, too. And I'm standing up straight, and I'm not falling over, and I'm not gasping for air. So just like I don't want to accept that I have to eat like a gentleman, I think when my relapses, when they began, it was always in abstinence, in program, and I always start over compulsively eating in abstinence and using the food in abstinence and telling myself, like 2 + 2 = 7, that I'm not going to gain weight from it. It's okay, I know my body. You know, and then the belt gets a little tight and then suddenly it's like, fuck it. I'm gone. And it's like instant like that. But it's been building for months and months and months, maybe years. It's this illogical thinking because I don't want to accept life on life's terms. I don't want to accept that. You know, I ever watch thin people eat? I mean, thin people leave things on their plate. You know, they don't eat every dessert that's at them, you know. And my sponsor pointed that out to me once. And I didn't want to believe it, but I did it. And it's true. It's rare that you'll find a thin person who's compulsively eating. And they're probably compulsive eaters anyway. And they've got the, you know, the anyway, I'll wrap it up. So have these disappeared? It disappears when I'm in the right state of mind. When I'm off, they come right back. So this is a one day at a time program for me. I mean, I can cash up a little credit in the bank with long-term abstinence, but it comes back quick. You know, they all, you know, I don't know if you've heard this, but, you know, they always say, you know, while you're recovering, the disease is doing push-ups in the room next door. And that is, that's true for me. And I'll leave it at that. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.